Hello everybody, welcome to another episode of Magnificite. I am Louis Tangarides, and once again I am sorry for this.
I'm not. This is maybe one of the greatest movies of all time. Rotten Tomatoes disagrees, of course, but this is our review.
So, Kate and I are here to bring you the joy of 2009?
8 or 9, yeah.
Yeah, is it one of those where it's released in some places and some...
I think it was 8.
It was 2009. It's definitely 2009.
Fine.
Yep.
Thank you. I didn't write it down. I don't research for this.
Yeah. So yeah, 2009 film 12 Rounds, an action movie directed by Rennie Harlin, who directed Die Hard 2.
And? And? Deep Blue Sea? They're smart sharks.
Yeah.
I just love that spectrum, you know. But it's, he has a, you know, he's an action man. Yeah. I think Cliffhanger was one of the...
He did Cliffhanger as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So, the film stars World Wrestling Entertainment megastar, at this point, undisputed top man of the Federation, John Cena.
Number 2 wrestler actor, in my opinion. Which is a very high praise, I think. I didn't expect to ever be like, he's the number 2 man, yeah. You know? And if I was just basing it off this movie, I don't think I would put him at number 2, to be honest. This is early in his career.
He is given far less to do.
He's just given a lot of running.
Yeah.
A lot of, I'm going to have to do this kind of pull up to escape. Yeah. Like, it's a lot of like...
Feats of strength.
I'm muscular and strong. And they call it out. Like, even his partner's like, you're a very large man.
Yeah.
Look how large you are.
He's exceptionally large at this point.
He's wrestler large at this point. I think he looks better now, but maybe it's just because he looks like more like a person. Like, still a very large person, yeah. But like, more like a person.
He was an absurd looking individual.
They all were, though.
Oh, no, he really
looked. But like, look at old pictures of like the Rock equally. I think they all look wild.
The Rock looks completely different now. If anything, he looks like a different man. Yeah, he looks like he's invented steroids, let alone actually taken them.
Number 3 wrestler actor. I've put John Cena above The Rock now.
Yeah.
Controversial? Maybe. I think Peacemaker really pushed him over the edge for me, I gotta say. He's very funny. And also, as an avid Fast and Furious stan.
Yeah.
which we recently also watched the 9th one again. He's great in that too.
Yeah. The film also stars in the villain role one of Ireland's top finest actors, Aidan Gillen.
A fine purveyor of HBO prestige television.
Yep.
And then a real mixed bag of films. Because I've seen him in good films also, but I enjoy his memorable performances in films such as this, and also that one with Jason Statham where he opens the movie. Jason Statham opens the movie by baiting a load of lads with a hurley, which is wild. Because he's a real... I'll say Aidan Gillen in that movie, I think it's called Blitz.
Yeah.
He's a real maniac in that film. He has it... He's a bit more together in this film. Like, his character's a bit more, like, thinking rationally.
Yeah.
If convolutedly.
Yeah.
But he's always a joy.
Now, usually with something like this, I'm not going to go too much into the background of the film because it's usually not that exciting a story. But with this particular movie, this film is a sort of a co-production with the then sort of nascent WWE Studios. So I'm not going to go too much into WWE Studios and the why of it all.
Yeah.
But there was a point where World Wrestling Entertainment decided to create their own film studio, decided to create a film distribution company.
I'm aware of what their first film is.
Yeah, so WWE Studios was started in about 2002.
Yeah,
because you know, media was growing and it was a natural evolution and all that sort of bollocks. And the standard of film that WWE Studios would be involved with, they would usually use them as star vehicles for their talent.
Yes.
And all former talent or whatever. Yep, WWE Studios, 2002, such classics as The Condemned, starring Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Which I actively refuse to watch. For no reason other than pure vibes. I have no reason to not want to watch it. I just don't want to.
You'll watch a film with an Irish terrorist.
Arms dealer.
Okay.
In this sense, I make the differentiation because I think it's important that, like, Aidan Gillen's character in this film, well, I feel like he'll sell arms to anyone. He's not on a particular mission, if you know what I mean. He doesn't have an ideology except, I would like my money, please.
I mean, apart from the fact that he does, but I'd say he causes terror there in this film.
He causes terror.
He's a terrorist.
But I suppose, is there a political ideology? Not really. He has a scheme. He has a revenge scheme. Or does he? But you know what I mean? That's yeah. I suppose. But yes, he is creating terror. I'm being pedantic. Yeah. But still, he doesn't have a cause necessarily. He is just being like, I must enact my revenge on John Cena.
Yeah.
Or does he?
Other great WWE Studios films include the horror classic, and I say that in the broadest of terms, See No Evil, starring Glenn Jacobs, a.k.a. Kane, a.k.a. Mayor of somewhere in Tennessee.
Is he a mayor?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, yeah, Kane's a libertarian.
And he's a mayor?
Yes.
That feels contradictory.
Yeah. Well.
But yeah, I don't care. That's amazing.
Yeah. libertarianism, am I right?
That's fun. There's another John Cena one that we watch is also from them.
The Marine.
That's a bit more straight ahead than this. I enjoy the convoluted nature of this more.
The Marine, it was John Cena's first foray into the movie business. The Marine is quite straight ahead.
Yeah, it's like very what I consider a straight ahead. It's entertaining. It doesn't have an eccentric hook to it, I suppose.
Yeah, it doesn't quite have the level of, this film is eccentric as hell.
Yeah.
While still, like, it's interesting.
But it's also kind of straight ahead at the same time.
It feels like
it's both.
Are playing against each other.
Yeah.
And I find that fascinating.
Yeah.
So, now, okay, 12 rounds, right. Sorry, I feel like we've been dilly-dallying. So, 12 rounds, comes out in March 2009. John Cena, at this point, is legitimately the biggest star in WWE.
He's the top boy.
No, he's the top guy. Yeah. He's been the top guy for about 3 or 4 years at this point. I get the impression, I can't say for certain, but I get the impression this, if any film was meant to, quote, make him a big star, or at least an attempt to make him a proper movie star, it would be this. Not because it was a super high budget, but because, you know, like, you get a director like Rennie Harlin.
Yeah.
This feels like an attempt to actually...
Like a mainstream kind of movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels like it. I'm not saying that that's what we get.
No.
But you get the impression that they... I'm not saying they were betting huge on him to the point where they were going to, like, stop him wrestling and just try and make him a film star. Because that was never going to be the case.
Mm.
But this feels like an attempt to make a film that would actually be popular.
Yeah. And I think, like,
or, like, be a bit of a hit.
As opposed to just kind of like a straight to video or straight to, it would be streaming nowadays, but like straight to video type of thing. Which is the energy of the others. I don't know if they had theatrical releases, but the
Cena Evo definitely did.
I think I remember Cena Evo existing.
Yeah.
But if you look at like the list of the WWE films, I feel like a lot of them have the energy of a video on demand.
Yeah,
five Marines.
Yeah. Like they made loads, multiple of the Marines. They made multiple.
They made more of these. Yep. They made more 12 rounds.
There's another 2 12 rounds, and they all have shit titles.
Don't want to watch them.
12 rounds.
Not without Cena.
12 rounds 3. Ugh, why? But these, like, I think what I'm trying to say is, this film, this plot, go back 10-15 years to this, Mel Gibson's the star. Like, it's not, like, or you... This is the sort of film that used to be, like, a star vehicle, is what I'm trying to say.
Sure. I think...
For context.
I think in theory, yes. I think the script doesn't quite hold up to that level. I suppose what I'm
absolutely
getting at.
Not.
But in theory, yes, I do understand what you're saying. Like, there are similarities to various other action movies in this movie.
Yeah.
So
many.
Yes.
This film is basically Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Basically, but what matter?
Yeah. Just... I've got to say this. Speaking of WWE Studios, the fanfare, you know, when they have like the production companies come on the screen and have, like, you know, Fox has the...
Yes. My first
WWE
note...
studio was fanfare was so shit.
My first
note... It
feels
like they weren't even trying.
Was look at that slow pan WWE Studios logo. It was on screen for a very long time.
Yeah.
Too long.
Yeah. And for
really
a
drawing attention.
Bar of the sound.
Really drawing attention to the fact that it's a WWE Studios bit.
Yeah.
And I felt, like, to the point where I felt it needed to be noted.
Yeah.
It was that long. And then, I mean, I'll say this. At least it's not, we've seen a lot of, we watch all this kind of movie. And sometimes it's fun to just count how many production studios are actually involved.
Yeah.
Because the more studios, honestly, that's a bad sign. If you have six studios, that's a bad, so this doesn't have that.
No.
This is that going for it, you know? But, like, the opening of this movie is so aggressive.
But it's like somebody watched The Bourne Identity.
It's Bourne Identity, but more like a video game version of The Bourne Identity. Not, you know, it is a lot of that kind of, like, through a tech camera found footage,
yeah.
CCTV, or,
yeah,
like, FBI high-tech,
yeah,
monitoring equipment stuff. But it goes on for, again, quite a long time.
Far too long.
It's very, like, great. It's very mid-2000s video game, very Bourne Identity as well. And I wrote, is this what CCTV and helicopter monitors look like? Is this the technology that we were actually working with in 2009? And at that point, we do find out soon, what agency is this? It was the FBI, but you don't find that out. You're like, what's happening? And also, I'm aware it's 2009, so, like, tech is naturally not as teensy tiny as it is now. But every cop has an earpiece that is, like, aggressively visible.
Yeah.
Like, none of them are blending in.
Nope.
They all have that spirally earpiece,
yeah,
just like, bam. So if they're trying to just blend in and not be spotted by the people they're pursuing, they're failing.
There's a point where John Cena's partner, because John Cena's character is called Danny Fisher.
Yeah.
Like, generic.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like...
He's the everyman, as much as John Cena can be an everyman.
At no point, even though he's referred to by his first name many times, you are never going to remember his name.
I don't remember anyone's name. I'm
his
just
name
calling...
Is
he's
John
Cena.
Cena. Like...
In the same way that I barely remember Aidan Gillen's character's name. He's
they
just
say
Aidan
his name
Gillen.
A lot.
They say his name a lot, and yet still I'm like, it's Aidan Gillen. I think it's something Johnson.
Miles Jackson.
Jackson. I was going to say Johnson. Yeah. No, I'm just going to call him Aidan Gillen throughout this. I'm going to forget that by the time we're halfway through this. I will have forgotten his character's name.
Sorry. You were saying?
No, just it's like I say, it's very, the other thing, there's a lot of things that kind of just go on too long in this,
yeah,
film.
I've no, what I find is this happens in the first, basically up to the point where John Cena and Aidan Gillen meet for the first time, it feels like...
Chop that down.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. What I was struggling with which I think the weakest part of the movie is actually the setup.
Yeah, 100%.
But it's so long. I'm like, is this a setup or is this act one? Like, is it... It's,
yeah,
so long. And it's just kind of setting up why Aidan Gillen wants to enact revenge,
yeah,
on John Cena. Like, so he has a reason, and then you get a nice, like, 1 year later.
It's also it's trying to establish that this guy is, like, some sort of double-crossing super genius man. Because they're trying to set him up as one of these people that seems to have, like, the double-cross to the double-cross to the double-cross set up years in advance,
yes,
or whatever.
And I'll say, like, there's a lot of the opening I do like. I just think it's kind of stretched out a little too much.
I think, yeah, we get too much time with, like, stuff I just don't really think is needed.
No. The other thing I wanted to address, which is, again, let's talk about the setup. Let's talk about the setup of Aidan Gillen's character,
yeah,
in this opening, which is, like, to be, like, he's an evil super genius full of double-crossing scheming.
He looks like a complete fuckboy that you'd find in a nightclub.
I wrote Aidan Gillen's character is dressed like every Irish man I've seen in a bar in the mid-2000s. There's a song by the Rubber Bandits called Dad's Best Friend, of which the opening lines are, bootcut jeans, salmon shirt, I have a skin routine and my elbows hurt. And he's not wearing, he's wearing, he, that's what he looks like. He has like his bootcut jeans and his blazer, and he's just really looking like, not club clothes, like pub.
Yeah.
Going out just for a casual, well, look nice, but it's not like a, we're not going too fancy. And I'll say this. In the opening specifically, they keep saying, show me that Irish bastard. Like, they're really hitting the Irish really hard. And I'm like, you're using technology where you're scanning people's faces to make sure it's him, which implies you are not confident with your eyes what he looks like. So what about his face? And you're like, that's an Irish man. And like, look, I know, I think it's Dara O'Brien has a joke about like people with big Irish head. And like, so what, you know, there's, but like, it's like, what are you trying to spot the Irishness of it?
Yeah.
It's like, it's not the 1950s, mate. Like, what are we talking about? How do you know he's Irish? And that, again, we're looking for an Irish dude. You can't visually spot an Irish guy. What are you talking about? John Cena, you've not heard him speak.
Yeah.
The voice is a giveaway, sure. But like, I'm like, what do you expect to see? Draped in a flag. Just fully draped in a flag. Big harp around the neck. I don't know. Covered in shamrocks. What are we meant to be seeing
here? He's holding a hurley.
Wrong movie. That would be fun though if his weapon of choice was a hurl. Some of the other things we learn about Aidan Gillen's character. Just actively walking around with a pint of Guinness. No, he'd let it settle, Louis. Please, please let that Guinness settle. We learn he decapitated his own brother for blowing a deal through some exposition. Which really sets up that like he don't give a fuck. He'll backstab that. He murdered his own sibling.
Yeah.
Because fuck you, I suppose. And there's more I want to say about his character, but maybe not right now.
We'll get to it.
The other person from this opening specifically I wanted to comment upon.
John Cena's partner.
Yes. I really wanted to talk about John Cena's partner. At one point,
I really get the feeling that he was basically written as Will Smith in Bad Boys 1.
A bit, yeah. So to set up why this is, so they have like a little, they're not the feds, they are like the local police.
New Orleans Police Department.
And they're like being the extra hands for this search for Aidan Gillen's character. And they have this little video of him like in a club with a girl as like, this is what he looks like.
Crystal clear video.
Professional
shot.
Very close up.
Like a promo shot.
Like
for
from the shoulders up kind of shot. Yeah, yeah.
Honestly, it literally looks like a club shot. It's not CCTV.
And they're you know, they're driving along and they're at like lights and he looks to his side and there's a girl driving a car.
Yeah.
And they go on and whatever, and he, you know, he's like, oh no, that was the girl, you know. So they pull them over. And the partner is like, I could hit on her, right? I have a chance with her. I'm going to flirt with her. You stopped her because you think she's dating a mega terrorist.
No, no. John Cena makes him stop her because he has pre-natural, like supernatural ability to recall faces.
Eidetic memory. He could have two seconds. But John Cena has said that. He's established, like, the reason we're stopping this girl, my partner, is because I think the mega terrorist we're after is in her car. Knowing that fact, his partner is still being like, I could give it a shot, you know?
Yeah.
This could work out. This could be my future wife, mate. Like, what are we talking about? And shockingly, it ends in Aidan Gillen kicking a boot open and shooting him in the arse. So I don't know why I'm getting so Irish in this. I think it's all the Irish comments at the start of this movie. But the shot of Aidan Gillen just kicking over that truck.
How many times do you reckon they had to do that?
I don't know. I'd love to think they got it perfect on the first go.
No, it's so funny. You need to shoot him again.
It's so funny. Because again, they don't open the boot and find him. He kicks open that boot.
Yeah.
And it's just like bam, 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 bam.
Yeah.
And then slithers through like the back seat of the car back into the front seat.
The back seat out.
It's wild.
Apparently the back seat is made out of fucking balsa wood.
And so And so, yeah, they're getting away. And John Cena
pursues them on foot.
I'd be like, why is John Cena T2ing after me? Through people. He really gave me, like, Terminator 2 vibes. Of just, like, he might as well have been turning to liquid. Shooting through those houses.
It is funny because in his previous film, Robert Patrick, a.k.a. the T-1000, yes. is the villain.
And Robert Patrick, once again, he's also in Peacemaker. It's giving Robert Patrick in Terminator 2. No qualms about running through people's houses.
Yep. It's incredible because, like, he has supernatural ability to work out exactly where
that car is going to be.
It's incredible. Like, this guy is, like, portrayed in this particular sequence as, like, the greatest fucking cop.
Yes. And I know that, like, the framing is, isn't he a hero?
Yeah.
Isn't he persistent? But, and I'm not saying he does anything, we'll get to it, but broadly, he's not doing anything...
Do you reckon they did this because they couldn't afford to do a car chase? Do you reckon the original script had an actual car chase and they decided they didn't have the money to actually create another car chase?
But does that display John Cena's character's heroic musculature?
I refuse to believe the original script had John Cena... Because, like, if you're that stacked, it's going to be quite hard to run that fast.
But he's also agile, apparently.
Yeah, I know. That's what makes it so funny. Like, but, like... I just
running forever.
I just
not
really
tiring.
Think the original script just probably had an act like an actual car chase, or even like a slightly different, or like a foot chase for a bit before becoming a car chase. I just, because he literally is able to, like, accurately guess what turns they're gonna make, and, like, plot through, of course, through all these houses and, like, gardens, what have you. Like, he knows this area, like, he lives there.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not. I'd say knowing the area is a reasonable enough thing, like, if this is his beat. But you're right. How can he predict where they are going to drive while they're trying to escape the cops?
Yeah.
These, like, international criminals. And and his solution in the end is to steal a boat and physically push it into the road so that it destroys the car they are driving. And I just feel like... He should definitely be fired, like, for all these, like, the build-up of it.
For him to get there, that means he's had to have gotten ahead of them.
He beat that car.
And knows where they're going.
Yeah,
like,
he beat that car on foot.
This guy is the Terminator.
Exactly.
Like, he is sold as, like, just unstoppable. And there's another scene after this where he is sold as almost as physically unstoppable for different reasons. But,
yeah,
like, the thing with the boat, like, I mean, the thing with the boat is just, like...
I'd be so pissed if that was my boat.
Oh my God. The amount of property damage that he...
The amount
the
of
FBI
property damage.
...commit, that they run up, sorry, in this pursuit over the course of this movie. I don't know how at least 60 people are not dead.
He makes a comment. He makes a comment in the first scene of The 1 year later... that, like, they did something wrong, and we'll come back to the cause of the revenge.
Yeah.
And he even says, they made us detective.
Yeah.
Like, we got promoted because this terrible thing happened, but we're perceived... So even John Cena's character's like, no, it is kind of fucked, isn't it?
Yeah.
That we did all this bullshit.
But they,
like,
you know, they got the terrorist.
They got the terrorist.
As it were.
And, like, they're...
It feels like they got it because, like,
their lack of procedure is, it's like with all of these kind of, like, maverick cop type movies, like your Die Hards. It's like done with good intent, but it's so, like, you were so chill just going about things this way.
I think the real reason he gets upset, though, is because I don't even know how to describe the shot where Aidan Gillen's missus gets killed.
So they get pulled out. He's like, get out of the car. They get out of the car. And Aidan Gillen's like, run. Like, let's run. And immediately, she steps, like, one foot into the road and just bang.
She gets SUV'd.
It is like Regina George getting hit by that bus in Mean Girls. Like, it's that level of sudden. It's very similar, the feeling. And I'm like, all you can do is laugh. It's awful.
I genuinely
I was just like, it's so sudden. Yeah. Like, what the fuck? It's so out of the blue.
Yeah.
And, like, Mean Girls that you're like... And then she's very dead, though. She doesn't come back with a back brace. Like, she's her character's very dead.
Dead. And they even give you a shot of her bloody and shit.
Yeah, yeah. No reason. They really want you to know she is, in fact, very dead.
Yeah. Like, it's... Oh, my God. It's a bizarre choice. Which is why it's here.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that alone, even if the rest of the film didn't exist, and the rest of it was, like, a really serious, slow-paced, like, psychological drama, that one shot would put it in this fucking category, because it's so goddamn ridiculous.
I think it's also an interesting choice.
Bizarre choice.
That's how she dies. There's kind of a more of a degree of separation between her and John Cena.
I know it's
to make him the good guy,
Yeah, because they want more money. Like, I mean, you could money the waters and have him, like... She, like, tries to pull a gun or something. Or she tries to pull something that he thinks is a gun.
You could muddy the waters even simply when he throws that boat down on him, it hits her.
Yeah.
And she dies. Like, you don't even have to make an extra step to it.
Do you reckon that was a little, like, cheeky rewrite in the script as well?
I think... Or maybe it was the first intent. I think they want you to know that, like, he... Even though, again, he's doing bullshit, he's, like, a real stand-up guy.
Yeah.
You know? There's no grey area really about his morals in this.
The reason why I feel like it's a rewrite is because the driver of the SUV is never seen or spoken about. Like, at no point in the bizarre revenge scheme
does the SUV driver get revenged upon.
But that's the thing.
Like, well, Aidan Gillen also couldn't get his name because it's a hit and run driver, apparently. Does your man go? Like, it's very hard to know what happens to him.
Yeah, but he's I mean, I just find it really interesting because it just makes me think that this, at least part of this, was like either rewritten just before shooting or like rewritten or edited in a weird way, because the way that his character is set up, you know, I don't believe, if we're meant to believe that he gives a shit about this woman, it doesn't make sense that he wouldn't be hell bent trying to find out who was driving that car.
Well, maybe that's our first clue. That maybe, spoiler alert, he actually might not give as much of a shit about her.
Because that driver makes no attempt to slow down.
No!
Makes no attempt to slow. He's powering through that. Sure, and that guy is,
slam it. And it's not like it's a motorway.
No.
It's I would argue, not quite a country road, but it's not a main road or anything. No. Why is he going so fast? I gotta leave this marina. I gotta get out. It's where boats are. Yeah. It's wild. And so, like, there's a lot in that opening that you also get a bit of the flavour of your two main FBI dudes.
Yeah.
That they're like, we gotta get this. We gotta get him.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's John Cena and it ends in the death of your one. It's like, basically, I won't forget you.
Yeah.
And that's the setup / full act one, maybe? It's not a long movie. But this is long. This is a long scene.
It does go on a little bit.
I think you could compress it and still keep a lot of, like, there's a whole section of betrayal that we just haven't gone into.
Yeah.
Of like the FBI trying to make a deal with another terrorist guy to catch Aidan Gillen. And he just is like, what if I fucking stab this guy instead? Like, it's and I'll escape and it's fine. No big deal. That was felt like it could be compressed slightly. Although there is a moment in that where I think it's Aidan Gillen is like, you know, I've written it down. It's the oldest trick in the book. Turn their heads with one hand, quietly slip out the back with the other. Yeah. All I could think of was Michael Caine and The Prestige. Yeah.
Every magic trick has three acts. The Pledge, The Turn, and The Prestige.
I was like, perfect. Cue Michael Caine for that scene, please.
Every magic trick has three acts. Pledge, The Turn, The Prestige.
Lovely.
Oh man, alright. Let's get to the concept.
The meat of the movie. This is what I mean, we've talked for so long. That's just the basic setup.
So the concept, now, I can't remember, and I've tried to understand, so a year later, we find that, you know, John Cena is a detective, his missus is a nurse. Is she a nurse or a doctor? I forget.
She's some sort of healthcare professional.
Yeah, they're not clear.
She could also be an EMT. She's driving a helicopter at the end. And I was like, oh no, she actually knows how to drive this helicopter. So she's something.
Some sort of medical person.
She's some sort of medical. Yeah.
So for reasons of, I don't know, I want to say comedy, but not quite. Then there's a plumbing issue. You know, And, oh, John Cena, he's not responsible enough. He's a detective, but he...
I was actually like, he's a... why are they playing him as a man-child who's never had household responsibilities?
Yeah. Bizarre. Bizarre.
I'm like, you're an adult man.
Bizarre writing choice. Genuinely, a completely weird writing choice. I don't really understand.
You could just have been like, oh, we need the plumber. Cool, I don't know how to plumb.
Yeah.
That's all you needed.
And the plumber gives him, like, sage advice like he's his mate.
Yeah. Well, it looks like they're mates.
But, like he's, like... He's like genuine close friend.
Yeah, yeah.
And then and then the house explodes.
Yeah.
Like,
well, John Cena leaves the house.
Yeah.
And his car explodes.
Yeah.
And then the house explodes with the plumber inside. The So, and while this is all happening, John Cena gets a phone call from Aidan Gillen, who's explaining the concept of what he's about to do, basically.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm going to steal your missus, and I'm going to give you...
I'm going to take what you that can't be replaced or something. I can't remember the exact... What, the, oh, what he said the
yeah,
exact
basically,
words.
You took from me something that can't be replaced, yeah. So I'm going to take that from you. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of... And he's like, and therefore, I'm going to steal her.
Yeah.
Steal her? I'm going to kidnap her. And I'm going to give you 12 challenges. 12 rounds.
Here's the thing, right? With the 12 rounds thing.
Yeah.
At least some of them are not actually challenges. They're just things that he does.
They're just steps.
Yeah. It's the actual concept of 12 rounds, yeah. Using the boxing analogy, is out of the window immediately.
Yeah.
And by his own words.
Yeah. Because it's not... It's not like the the Trials of Hercules or something where they're all like quite distinct.
Hercules, you must do these things.
It's quite distinct challenges, and then you're on to the next one.
Yeah.
They're kind of like, it's a bit of a thread.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like you're already on to six and you're like, what? Yeah. Five didn't really happen then.
Yeah.
You just got a step.
Because he says like the explosions were round one.
They were round one, yeah.
Well, that doesn't make any sense as a round because he didn't die. He doesn't even know he's even fucking involved.
That's true, but he didn't die.
And also, he doesn't even get the chance like to not... It's, the entire concept of it being about 12 rounds.
Yeah.
Is, as I say, completely ludicrous.
Yeah, but no, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't need to be 12. Logic. No, it doesn't fulfill its setup as essentially like, I suppose it's not quite a pun, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The double meaning of it. I do enjoy that phone call quite a lot because he's basically just screaming, rematch!
Yeah.
Rematch! I just took round one because I secretly planted explosives all over your shit and blew it up.
Yeah.
And the size of the explosion is hilarious.
Yeah,
the size and CGI, the green screenness of all the explosions in this movie is perfect. I love it. Also important to note that I'm fine with, like, you know, Aidan Gillen escapes from prison.
Yeah.
That's grand. He also at some point sneaks in, or has his goons sneak in, but I think it's probably Aidan Gillen sneaking in and plants all these explosives in the house and the car. And we enter this scene because John Cena took a nap and is waking up.
Yeah.
How long was he napping for?
How does he have no home security system?
Their houses with no... It's after Katrina, as they keep saying.
You're telling me on the detective salary you can't afford a basic alarm system?
Maybe it never occurred to him.
And he's got home. He's literally a fucking police who
put
away who helped put away like one of the most wanted arms dealers. There is no fucking way that some sort of like international enforcement people or whatever are not gonna like say to him, you might want a bit of protection or something. There's no way that he just like goes about his business like nothing's happened.
He's so confident in his abilities to keep his...
I love it.
To keep his cohabiting partner and pug safe.
Yeah.
And while this is happening, so his missus has gone off to work.
Yeah, she's taking that ferry.
She's taking the ferry. And he realises what's going to happen, that she's going to get abducted off this ferry. And it's interesting, to make sure that John Cena can't call her to warn her.
Yeah.
A guy who we find out later is his goon.
Yeah.
Is like, oh, can I borrow your phone to call my daughter? And she just hands him that phone.
Yeah.
In 2009, were we just handing strangers our phones on public transport?
I would not have done
I'm aware it wasn't like a smartphone, so they're not as expensive, but are we really just handing over phones to randos?
Absolutely not.
In 2009.
Absolutely fucking not. And like,
it's wild. It's a wild conceit. In the 90s, I'll almost allow it.
Yeah.
But like, Not now.
And this is the moment we see John Cena go on what can only be described as an incredible run.
Oh, he outruns a boat.
Pretty much.
No, he doesn't outrun a boat because he gets in a car at some point.
He doesn't outrun the boat in the sense of if he gets to the destination where the boat is going. He is able to somehow run, despite the fact the boat is in boarding mode. So, and I believe this is a similar ferry to the one in the film Deja Vu.
Yes, that's also in New Orleans, isn't
it? Yep. It wouldn't surprise me if it's the exact same ferry.
Could be.
Like, line. So, he's able to run from his gaff to there.
To the port kind of area. To the port.
Well, she's on the boat, so they're boarding. Obviously, like regular crossings. So, he is somehow... I think he's run there in about 2 minutes. Yeah. If that.
Because he just misses the boat.
Yeah.
He's not like, oh, it's well gone. Like, it is that feeling of, like, the bus going and you're just like, no, like, it's so close. But she had left a while back.
Yeah.
He had a full conversation with his plumber and with Aidan Gillen before he started running.
Yeah.
His speed and stamina in this movie.
It's incredible.
Why is he not competing professionally? If this is his talent for running, why is he a cop?
If I remember correctly, round two is him kidnapping Mrs. John Cena. I believe it's called Molly.
He wrote, it's a game, 12 rounds. Round one, I took your house. Round two, I took Molly. If you're still standing after 12 rounds, you get her back.
But, like, again, the concept makes no sense because it's not like he beat the shit out of him and then took Molly. Like, a boxing match requires both competitors to be in the same fucking ring for it to even start.
Maybe sometimes the emotional pain can actually hurt more and last longer than the physical pain of getting punched in the face. So maybe he's like, he'll be so distraught that I've stolen his girlfriend that he will just crumple up into a heap. And I'll win. Because at the end of the day, I have no use for this lady. There's an implication, I feel like, if he were to just not play the game, he'd be like, fuck it then, I'll throw in a river or something, you know? Like, I don't think he was going to give her back if he didn't engage with the game. So he realises he can't get the boat. Yeah. He's got to get to the hospital she works at.
So he just nicks his dude's car.
It's fun that he specifically commandeers, like, a real muscle car.
Yeah.
Like, a real... I wrote... that this movie allowed John Cena to walk so his Toretto equivalent could run in Fast 9.
Yep.
He is hoofing it in that muscle car.
Yeah. I honestly think...
It's very fast and furious.
Yeah,
He's all over the shop.
I think Danny Fisher could... Danny Fisher could probably take... I believe it's Jacob Toretto in a fight.
Yes, it is Jacob, you're right, yeah.
Just about.
Similar skill set.
Yeah, it's true. Similar skill set.
Similar skill set. I think... In theory, Jacob Toretto is a more skilled, like intentionally more skilled at like some of the specialist stuff because he's a spy.
Yeah, because he works for Kurt Russell.
Whereas like it just seems like...
That's why we waited 9 films to see him.
That 12 rounds John Cena is almost developing these skills like on his own time.
Yeah.
I feel like you could be a perfectly capable of doing your job without these extra... Without the ability to drift.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You need to know how to drag race.
Yeah.
To be a law enforcement officer. So he's clearly cultivating these skills on his own time. And so, yeah, that brings us then to the fact that he knows his girlfriend is gone and he has to deal with this convoluted bullshit for the rest of the day. And there is such planning.
Yeah.
This is why I love this movie. It's so convoluted.
Yep.
There's clearly so much forethought would need to be, like, not just thinking out a plan. I think if you're, you know, in theory, if he was in prison for a year, he has time to be planning, to be planning convoluted bullshit. But the practical logistics, the round three clue is like a spray painted code on a random house. He has to plant a phone in a Motorola shop.
Yeah.
You know? That hasn't been bought, apparently. Like, it's
on.
There's a lot of, like, someone needs to physically go to a place and do a thing. There's a lot of that. And I'm like, how long ago did you break out of prison?
You would need more than just, like, one or two goons for this.
The only person we get exposed to is one goon.
Yeah.
Him and one goon.
Yeah.
And I really feel like the goon is just a bonus almost. I think without the goon, he'd still get it done. He'd still get it done. It's just that there is a lot of like, I physically need to go rig this explosive device.
Well, I think
with no one noticing me.
We never see or hear that this dude has any sort of like team before he gets arrested. No. We never hear any of that. We hear none of that. It is literally, this guy seems to be able to be an international arms dealer without any sort of like team or backup, which...
It kind of feels seems like impossible. He has a lot of networks, like he's a lot of contacts, but they are not necessarily his inner circle. Like that's the impression I got. Like he'll make a deal.
Yeah, he'll make a deal, but he's one person.
But he's one man. Yeah.
The point is backing that deal.
Yeah, it's wild.
Like, if you make a deal with just one person in that world, and you don't like this, you just shoot him. Who's because no one's going to come back on you because he doesn't have anyone back. Like
that's the thing. No... Like, is he hiring mercs when he's going doing these? Like, is, what? Like, how? You're right. He needs an infrastructure.
Yeah, he has no infrastructure, and yet he's we've not introduced any infrastructure.
Well,
again, we are basically. But I think that we are sold that this guy is like just unreal, almost.
Yes.
Like, and he just looks like.
He looks like some lad.
Yeah. It is the most generic.
He looks like some some lad at like your local kind of rural, but not in a city even. Yeah. Just like, you know, your village pub having a big one with the lads, you know? Like he's not, there's a lot of villains in movies that are very like, you know, I'm going to call it like your Mads Mikkelsen type of villain who's very like classy and suited and like almost doesn't need, they don't need to get their hands dirty because they have their own goons, but you don't want to fuck with them personally because they can do it.
Yeah.
They're just above that now.
Yeah.
You know, whereas he's not, he's just, again, he's just more of a, he's just a lad.
Yeah.
Just going around, you know, he doesn't need a suit to blow stuff up. He can just do that, you know?
Yeah. Do you like the fact that when we get to the round where when we get to the one with the fire, when John Cena's brother is another first responder, he's a fireman. He's a fireman. Yeah. So this film
loves first responders.
This film is definitely pro first responders, but I think it's anti-federal agencies.
Oh, the feds come across very badly in this film. Yes.
Is it like how many films do you think there exist where it's like the generic, well, the city police department are treated, you know, all the heroic characters in the police department.
Yeah.
And any, like, FBI people are just secondary antagonists. In any respect, whether it's FBI, DEA, ATF, fucking...
I think that happens a lot. Anytime there's a jurisdiction issue, that's a conflict.
Yes, yeah, it's not...
They love that.
It's not, we're in charge now, but we really need you to help us.
No.
Like, you still have a role to play. It's just like, no, get fucked.
So that's... And I think the this movie...
Weird conflict.
This movie takes that further, actually.
It does.
So there's two... There's a whole FBI team, but there's kind of two main characters that we know. Again, I don't remember their names, but there's like a lead guy.
One of them's Santiago.
There's a lead guy who's an absolute dickhead. Like, he's the real... And then there's one who's a bit more chill about things.
Yeah, Santiago's the more chill one. That I do remember.
Cool.
I forget... I genuinely cannot remember what the other dude was called.
I'm going to call him FBI man for the purposes of this conversation. but they're such dickheads to John Cena.
Yeah.
Fred Fed's fun. But also they seem to give absolutely zero consideration to, like, the human collateral of absolutely catching zero. Aidan Gillen.
Absolutely zero.
Any life is fine if I can get this guy, kill those civilians, if it means that I can catch this criminal.
Yep.
And I'm like, I'm not saying you don't need to catch him. I'm saying you can just think it through a bit.
Yeah.
You don't need to just... And like that, and John Cena is like, come on, man. Yeah. Even Santiago's like, come on, man. it's crazy how much they do not care.
No.
They do not care about human life.
Nope.
In this film. So, like, the feds come across particularly bad for that reason.
Yep.
And there is a bit of a... We'll get to it, but there is a bit of, like, a character growth
towards the end. Yeah, towards the end of the film, suddenly becomes very a buddy cop movie.
It's very late in the game.
Yeah.
Like, they're completely horrible
for
the majority of this film, just being kind of like, you don't need to know what you don't need to know. Fuck you.
The classic trope.
It is a very classic trope.
It's like, you don't need to... Matey boy has kidnapped this dude's wife.
Yeah.
If anything, this guy probably needs to know more than anyone in the world. What is that?
He was personally threatened at the end of that first act by your man being like, I won't forget you. So maybe, yeah, give him a heads up.
Yeah, because he would have absolutely put that in the fucking report.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been in the sort of official documentation.
Yeah.
That probably would have accounted for in sentencing. He probably would have been called as a witness, you know, or at least he would have, he would have been mentioned. There's no way that that's not.
So that, again, they just don't care.
He would have been the thing is, as soon as you, well, this is what I'm saying, this is what, one of the many reasons this film is gloriously magnificent, right, is because surely, if someone is threatened, if the arresting officer is threatened with revenge by someone that's been put away, if that guy gets out of fucking prison, the first thing you do, if that guy's escaped, is you get on the phone to any sort of people that have been threatened, any sort of not so the first thing you do, obviously.
At minimum, you give them a heads up, if not actually actively protect them.
Yeah, because it would have been on fire, yeah.
But no, it's fine. He has time to skulk around and plant explosives in your home.
Yep.
You don't have a home now.
Yep. Brutally murdered. I believe your dog has also been... Sorry, I don't know why I said that. Dog is deliberately passed to the neighbour family.
Yes, the dog survives.
As if they are... They just
Well, he's running.
He hands it to a child. And the child, oh, sweet, we'll look after your dog. Implying that they do it regularly, which is fair enough.
Yeah, they're not going to kill the dog, Louis. They want you to, again, be on the movie side. That would...
But the thing, if you kill the dog, that, if anything, it really makes you root for John Cena more.
In that John Wick kind of way, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Why do you need to fucking kill the dog in John Wick?
Well, I
100%.
There's a lot. I feel like Martin McDonagh does that a lot. Like, if someone harms an animal, they're like, "Well, I got to get my bloody revenge on this person."
Yeah.
I like how, especially from kind of now in the movie, which is we're in the fire station.
Yeah.
From now in the movie, Aidan Gillen's character is having such fun for a period when he calls him.
Yep.
Like, the shot where he's calling him about, getting into the fire truck and stuff, he's doing that thing that you see, pre-teen girls at sleepovers do when they're on the phone. He's on his front, hands in his... Yeah. Head in his hands, twiddling his feet. Like, it's almost adorable. And he's just like, surprise! Just to lead into John Cena having to, again, absolutely hoof it through the city in a fire truck. For very legitimate reasons, obviously. Yeah.
It turns into Speed.
It does! There's multiple parts of this film where it feels like it's turning into Speed.
I'd say
there's at least three parts, separate, distinct parts, where I'm like, you're doing a Speed?
I know I said earlier this film was basically Die Hard with a Vengeance. But it is basically Die Hard with a Vengeance.
And occasionally Speed, exactly. And there's so much... the reason he has to power through in a fire truck is because they had to go up into a safety deposit box bank. One of them's a clue, one of them's a bomb, and he has 7 minutes or some shit to get it across the city.
Yeah.
And he's like, go in the fire truck.
Yeah.
And it's 7 minutes to go across the city. And John Cena's logic is, they're on the top floor. He's straight up just like, what if I abseil down this GD building?
Yeah.
Instead of going, because I don't have time for stairs. I think, and he just, obviously the rope or whatever isn't long enough because we need the conflict.
It's like electricity cables that you, I can't remember what kind of cables they were.
So much better? And so he chooses, instead of just falling straight to the concrete ground, he just, he's like, oh, there's some scaffolding here. Yeah. Smashes through that scaffolding.
Yeah.
Because of his, again, thick musculature.
I can only assume his thick musculature is
it's also what it protects him.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he just gets up.
Yeah.
Pretty much. He just gets up.
Yeah.
Anyone else would be immediately in the hospital.
Like I say, he's a Toretto, so this is why.
Exactly. This is what I mean. It's the same. It's Fast and Furious logic.
This is just an origin story.
Yeah.
For Jacob Toretto.
Yeah.
If this is retroactive retcon to be an origin story for Jacob Toretto, not even an origin story, but a Jacob Toretto story. Yeah. He was secretly undercover as Danny Fisher under orders of Kurt Russell. He had to take a wife.
And he does just smash into a lot of shit with that fire truck.
Yeah. And it's very enjoyable to watch.
My favourite thing that he smashed into was like what I think was a tiki bar.
Yes.
Just absolutely plowed through that tiki bar.
And that tiki bar, oh my god,
haven't local businesses suffered enough?
Local businesses get an absolute bollocking in this movie.
Just
like unfair. Local services and local businesses do get a fucking spanking in this film.
Yeah.
Does the director, does Renny Harlin hate tiki bars? We don't know.
Who knows?
We don't know.
And it was at this point that, again, I queried to myself while we were watching it, how long has it been between his escape from prison and this day?
Yeah.
Because there's so many practical steps needed to get to this point. And I kind of got the implication at different points. They never actively said, like, oh, it's been this long. I get the vibe it's been about a week. It hasn't been 3 months, you know? I get the vibe it's been like a week. And he, very elaborate scavenger hunt bullshit.
Yeah.
Very, a lot of breaking into places.
Yeah.
High security places. Yeah. He's like an Interpol level criminal.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No one's noticing him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just a guy, so whatever. But still. So he has to power on one of the things. One of them is a bomb. He throws it into the water.
Yeah.
And then the other box is a key to a hotel.
Yeah.
Like a hotel room. So they're off again.
Yeah.
But he didn't get blown up, so I suppose that was round four or some shit.
Yeah, I think that's technically round four or five. And then...
No, I think it was round five, because round four was... Oh, maybe round three was the Motorola store.
No.
They're not clearly distinct.
No. That's amazing. Better.
They all run into each other.
Trying to track which round is which.
It's very hard.
There is a point in the middle between somewhere between four and about nine where
it's all just one big task.
It feels like he's just skipping. He's just
skipping around. There's a very distinct start.
Yeah.
With blowing up his house. There's a clear task at the end.
Yeah.
Because he says it, this is your last round.
Yeah.
But everything else is kind of a blur, to be honest.
Should we get into the elevator round?
I do enjoy the hotel quite a lot. I think this is my favourite round. Before they even get to the elevator, they're like, oh, we better find out like where he was here. Yeah. So they go through the CCTV. And he was like... I think it's cute to like make a little sign and hold it up to CCTV because you know John Cena's gonna see it.
That's the thing.
He has to find it
by a specific time, otherwise it wouldn't work because how does he know that he's gonna find it? Like there's
a part of me that was, because I was also thinking this, I'm like, oh, it's convenient that all of these steps along the way.
Could be looking at that CCTV footage
for fucking hours.
Well,
they kind of explain it somewhat in that it's not automated.
Yeah.
The implication is, you find it later in the movie, that Aidan Gillen essentially has like a camera and a button. So when he wants things to happen, he'll press the button.
Yeah.
So the timing kind of... But there is a thing where I was like...
They still have to...
It's lucky that he could predict John Cena's every move. But then I thought, did he Nathan Fielder this? So actually, it's an elaborate... flowchart.
Yeah.
With all he rehearsed this, you know. I don't think that's the case. Yeah. I think I'm doing a lot of the work of the movie for it with that proposition.
Yeah.
But it did occur to me, be like, we have backups for this, you know. So I thought that was cute to be like, I'm still here with his little sign. And they go into the world's dodgiest, oldest elevator.
And
I'll tell you, Lou, when I was little, I was really afraid of elevators because I didn't want to get stuck in an elevator.
Yeah.
There was an episode of Fireman Sam when I was small. Someone gets stuck in an elevator and Fireman Sam has to get the people out of this elevator.
Yeah.
And that traumatized me for like 10 years. I'm not afraid of elevators now.
Yeah.
I'm a grown woman. But scenes like this don't help because it's the exact fear that you'll just start to plummet. That elevator's going to plummet to the ground. And I was like, no. And it's because it's like the jankiest, oldest elevator.
Yeah.
Oh.
It is very janky and old.
And he has to save...
One of the oldest in the city.
One of the oldest in the city. And at a certain point, he gets stuck.
Yeah.
there's only enough time, he gets told, in a little video from his missus.
Which is on a device that he has, he's stashed tablet. Somewhere that it has to somehow just randomly...
Little tablet.
It just comes across.
Instead of... Well, I get the impression that, you know, like, in elevators, there's that little, like, phone that you, if you did get stuck, you could, like, call down, that he put it there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, like, kidnapped girlfriend says what the story is. You have 60 seconds from the time this video ends to get out. It's, in theory, only enough time for one of you to get out, is John Cena and...
Willie,
the...
The only character name I actually genuinely do remember.
The maintenance guy. Yeah. and John Cena, because he's a hero, is like, I'm going to get both of us out.
It's also a test of strength.
It's... I wrote, John Cena is straight deadlifting this man through the roof of this elevator. Like, or it's almost less of a... It's more of a kettlebell action, because it's like his hands are gripping onto this guy's two hands, and your man is not helping. Like, he's not putting his foot on the thing or anything. John Cena is just straight. And part of the thing is, like, Willie is a large man.
Yeah.
And that's part of the thing.
The guy who plays Willie, and I remembered this because I was looking at Roger. We watched this film again, and I was like, why does that guy look so fucking familiar? Then I did a little bit of research. It's fucking E. Honda from the Street Fighter movie.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah,
another classic.
Yeah, so like he's a so yeah, he is just deadlifting this dude.
Yeah, it's impressive. And he gets him up onto the top of the elevator. He just needs to get him to grab onto the ledge before the elevator goes. But no,
it's something about his back.
He's like, my back hurts. Being yanked up by John Cena's impressive strength has damaged his spine.
Yeah.
And he's finding it difficult to get up onto the ledge and stuff. And so, unfortunately, at that point, the elevator blows. The way the fall is shot is, again, very funny. Because it's so much CGI and swoosh. And we get all the different people's fucking experience of this, like, plummeting elevator. And, like, there is a definite... There's supposed to be an emotional gravity to this scene. You are supposed to feel sad.
Yeah.
And it's sad that Willie is dead and that will be used to the... But the way it's shot is almost cartoonish.
Yep.
Like, there's a woman whose hair almost gets, like, blown up outside the thing. And I'm like, what are we... is this Looney Tunes?
Yeah.
It's such a choice. It's so big a choice, you know? Again, very video game-esque.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. and it's like, at a certain point, Willie says, like, oh, I can't die, I have a wife and kids. But later in the movie, John Cena just hears that voice in his... It's the only time you hear him have, like, memory voices.
Yeah.
I have a wife and kids, man. And you're like, what?
I can't die, I have a wife and kids. Apparently, having a wife and kids makes you immortal in the 12 rounds.
Well, he needs to support them, Louis.
I'm kidding. I'm being amusing.
Put respect on Willie's name.
After that, we get this. Then we get the goddamn bus sequence.
Where it's truly speed. This is true speed, except instead of a bomb on a bus, it's a bomb on a woman on a bus. But, There's a whole, again, scavenger hunt-esque type thing of being like, where is he? There's a 50-50 chance. It's like, oh, the bus is 50-50. He's on the bus. I enjoyed...
The best thing is 50-50 is not even like the route, the bus route. It's like
the number of bus.
It's like the specific bus. Yeah.
I enjoyed while he was saying this 50-50 thing to him on the phone, Aidan Gillen's just eating an ice cream.
Yeah.
Eating ice cream. And he throws the ice cream away. What a waste.
Yeah.
Wait, so out the window.
Hang on a minute. I thought the ice cream was when he was talking about the streetcar. Because he was on a streetcar when he was eating the ice cream. He's not on a bus. He's on a fucking like streetcar tram thing.
Oh, he is eating the ice cream on a tram.
Yeah. And it looks like a good ice cream.
But
when did he have time to acquire it?
He is... He's walking with pure freedom, even though everyone seems to be looking for him. I think he's on a streetcar.
Yeah.
But the next bit is them going to the bus.
Yeah.
Because I wrote this in order. And the streetcar comes later again.
Yeah.
And I've written, it's a bomb on a bus, but without the charm of speed.
Yeah.
And so John Cena gets on the bus.
Yeah.
And he sees his lady.
Yeah.
You can see the little lights of explosives under her coat.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, lovely, lovely little hug for them. Aidan Gillen's just on the chair over there. Like, he's not hiding.
Yeah.
But there's a period of time. I get you'd be like, okay, this is my partner. Yeah. I'm just focusing on them. You might, like, in your peripherals, see the, like, the supervillain that you're...
Yeah.
That you're getting phone calls from. He's right there. And then they just sit down and talk.
And I don't think they're using, like, quiet voices. And it's not an empty bus.
No. I did write this. There is something.
There's these random shots.
I wrote, everyone else is just so used to not looking at anyone on a public bus that it's just, they're practically invisible. Yes. And that,
you get shots of people
that's
looking.
That's reality. They're like looking and then deciding they don't want to get involved, which is the exact experience of being on a bus. If anyone has been on public transport, especially in a big city, no one is stepping in. people are just so used to being like, I'm not dealing with this.
It's not even like,
not for me.
It's not even, it's even crazier. It's not like he goes and like, they're at the back of the bus and there's like a few seats buffer and then there's people. It's,
oh, they're surrounded by them. No, yeah.
Middle,
they're right
much.
In the middle. Right in the middle. And all the while the FBI are tracking the bus and they're trying to get snipers set up to take Aidan Gillen out in the bus. And I also wrote, if I was FBI Ray, who I think is Santiago, I am reporting literally everyone involved in this case. Again, no one cares about human life except for him.
Yeah.
And main FBI man is like, just fucking take him out. But sir, the civilian casualty, do it.
Yeah.
Do it, man. Don't give a shit. Just take him out.
And they fucking miss anyway.
And the reason that John Cena can't just like punch him to death is because so he set up the bomb on the girlfriend.
He's got like a dead man switch.
He's got a dead man switch. If he takes his finger off for more than 10 seconds, it goes off.
Yeah.
But the thing I wanted to note about this is he didn't just like set up a bomb on her.
Yeah.
He set up two bombs.
Yeah.
The first one does a tiny charge that drives a nail directly into her heart. And then 30 seconds later, a real bomb happens and they all explode anyway. And I'm like, wow, that's just a level of like, I want you to watch her specifically die.
Yeah.
And then we all die. It's like, what? What kind of twisted nonsense? The effort to cause that level of...
Where do you require an item that does that exact thing?
He's an arms dealer.
I need one of the thing that does the charge in the heart. Like,
the nail in the heart.
What use would you even have for that in any sort of combat situation? When guns exist?
Someone was clearly thinking about this exact scenario that he needed.
I would have loved it if he'd have made it himself.
I'm sure he did. That's the thing. I think like that's the implication. He's just making this shit himself.
He was growing up in Dublin. That's...
I will say, this is a side note, but like I feel like he's doing an accent that is, I still have my Irish accent, but I've lived in America for quite a while. Do you get that?
I think you might have been instructed to do something like that.
That's what I mean. I think it's a choice.
Yeah.
But I think there's like the way that
he recently would have just literally
come off the wire probably. Yeah. Because I think he's still clearly Irish, like his accent's still clearly Irish, but you can hear bits of like an Americanism coming in at different points.
Yeah.
In the same way that like I have this.
Yeah.
When my accent has changed in the context of London because it makes me more easily understood by people.
Yeah.
Whereas in Limerick, I'm like full Irish.
Yeah.
Because people understand me.
Yeah.
But you do. You know you still have your accent, but it's slightly changed. I think it's there's somewhat of that going on here.
Yeah.
And yeah, he gets away.
Yeah.
John Cena protects him from that sniper. He wants his girlfriend to live. And then he punches main FBI man in the face for being a dickhead. Very satisfying.
With John Cena's giant fucking fist.
Yeah. There's a fist bump earlier in the film.
And his fist is literally about three times the size of his partner's.
It's comical. I also enjoyed that particular shot of fist bump because they just like replay it a little as well. Just because they're like bros.
Yeah.
Come on, brother. Wrong wrestler, but I think that it's still relevant.
We've been going for a while. We have to talk about the fucking streetcar sequence.
Yes, that's where we are.
Oh,
What
a beautiful piece of nonsense that is. This film then just becomes a body cop movie.
Yeah.
Like, so the other FBI man and him, like, the convoluted nature of the 12 rounds at this point is almost inexplicable. It's almost inexplicable.
But I also think that there's some city planning issues that are inexplicable. I personally know that if
bureaucracy's getting shaded.
If I were planning some sort of family fun day, right?
Yeah.
Why
would you hold it in the...
Why would I set it right at the end of a tram line, like right up against the gate? And there isn't like a big metal fucking end. It's like a, I don't know, like a wooden barrier. Like you're waiting for a parade. Thing. But still, it's so easily plowed through if something goes wrong. And you're like right up against it. Yep. So many families, Louis.
Yep.
So many families. I just...
He basically gets told he's got to stop, like... the tram, the brakes have been cut out on this tram, and he has to find a way to stop it. And for some reason, we now get a sequence where Agent Santiago is like trying to get them. He's basically trying to get in touch with the local authorities and what have you. And they're like they think it's a prank call. Like it suddenly becomes a body cop movie.
Yeah.
And all right, it's. Like, you know, we have, like, incompetent authority figures, fast driving, and then it turns into, like, to slow down the tram, they can't, like, the drivers try to slow it down, the brake's fully gone. Like, to slow down, they take their car, and they basically just, like, get in front of the tram.
Yeah, they back up into that tram, and then they just hit the brakes on the car. And my question is... How much resistance did he expect that one brakes car to offer?
I know.
To a full-ass tram.
Bigger tram.
Massive streetcar. Also weak. There's a point where there's just cars hanging out in the tram line and then they have to move real fast because the tram's coming along. I'm like, why are you parked on a tram line, man?
Yeah.
Even without this incident, that wasn't going to end well for you.
No.
I just feel like, and look, maybe we shouldn't have an expectation that he would know this, but like John Cena's expectations of the laws of physics are flawed. A, your car isn't going to offer enough resistance to stop the velocity of that car. And their next solution is, okay, we can't get the... It's not called a council, but like we can't get the council to turn off the electricity. So we're just going to drive the car and then jump out of it directly into the electricity main. So it causes a huge blackout. And then I think they expected the tram just to stop at that point.
Yeah.
But again, velocity.
Yeah.
It's going to take a bit to slow down.
Yeah.
So it keeps just powering through. And it does hit into that little family fun day. They just get people. Their solution is just to go like, move, move. And I'm like, what's happening? What was the point of any of this? You should like just evacuate the people.
I love him trying to. I love the whole thing. So he gets out. Like he smashes the window in. He climbs on top of the car. He goes on top of the fucking tram to try and like hack the fucking brake line, I think.
Yeah.
Doesn't work. So then... He just climbs his ass back into the car. I'm like, I don't...
A lot of things just don't work
for
this.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, like, it wasn't one of those things where, you know, like, it stops right an inch before the barrier. Yeah. No, it slams through.
Yeah, yeah.
Slams through.
And it looks like people got away, but I don't think... I don't buy that everyone just gets away. Conservatively, I say 60 people at least die.
Yeah.
Through the actions of the characters in this film. And not necessarily the things you see, but like knock-on effects of like, you know, smashing through a car, which could then smash into something else, or it could, you know... There's
a lot of collateral damage in this film.
The fucking tax bill, or the... Not the tax bill. The
Yeah, the city. The city bill.
The city is paying out. This city is fucking paying out.
They're raising council tax, or the equivalent to pay for this shit.
They are going to have a lot of weenie roasts to raise funds.
Yeah. Will we go to the final round?
Let's go to the finale. Let's jump.
Go to the final round.
Because we've got to talk about the fucking scheme.
And the thing is, like, for context now, we've had the character growth with the dickhead fed. He's like, oh yeah, people matter, basically. And he's like, I'll help you now.
Yeah.
I remember why. I remember why I do this.
Yeah.
So what Aidan Gillen says to him is the final round is here's this clue to find where your girlfriend's going to be. She's a bomb on her. You, John Cena, your specific thumbprint will turn off that bomb and you can have her back.
Yeah.
And then it's, I love his little call to him, which is basically like, are you sorry? Yeah. Why didn't you visit my dead girlfriend's grave? Game over. Yeah. Ah! That's the call. Yeah. That's the sum up of the call. And then we find out, maybe it's not about the girlfriend.
Yeah.
Maybe it hasn't been about the girlfriend this whole time. Maybe every round has been getting John Cena to put some puzzle pieces into place for a fucking heist scheme. It's a heist movie now. It's a heist.
Yeah.
It's not about revenge at all.
Which is basically, again, that's Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Yeah.
It's exactly... Basically. Yeah.
And it is, at the end of the day, it's about the money. He's a consummate businessman at the end of the day.
Yeah.
He loves the drama of making it a poetic scenario. He's clearly enjoying the convoluted plan he set up. But it is a heist at the end of the day. It's all about that heist. And I really enjoy, I enjoy Aidan Gillen throughout this film. Yeah. I actually think his performance is excellent.
The petulant, the walk.
The swagger. I wrote the swagger. The little look he gives, like, fuck yeah. it's all so good. Yeah. It's so good. And he's like, you know, he makes his way into the bank when they're trying to get the stuff out. Yeah. It's all set up so everything's perfectly in time. And his getaway plan is to bring your one to the hospital and use the fact that she works there to get her to get the hospital helicopter and fly him out.
Yeah.
So it had to be John Cena's girlfriend. It had to be a fire truck. It had to be all this shit. It had to be... the reason he needed a fire truck is because the money he stole, he put through, like, a big water pipe, and he needed a fire truck to suck the water back out of the money.
Yeah.
What? And then he hides it in a body bag.
Yeah.
No one's questioning why this body bag is flooding money onto the... or flooding water onto the ground. As what body do you think is in that body bag? It doesn't make any sense. Oh, and so they get to the helicopter. Yeah. And the final scene is...
Helicopter fight. Yeah.
John Cena gets to that roof just as they're taking off.
He manages to shoot the other FBI guy.
He does manage to shoot FBI guy, but John Cena, like a hero, jumps from the building and grabs onto the feet, the skis of the helicopter.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, the little rail. And through sheer brute strength, just... Pull ups himself into that helicopter. The power of that core to do that perfect jump from Cena to the helicopter. And also, I feel like Aidan Gillen's character, who is just like Aidan Gillen, you know, is very casual about just kind of hanging onto the edge of the door of that helicopter and like getting out onto the little feet. Yeah. And I'm like, stay inside, man.
Yeah.
What happens if you fall?
Yeah. And also, I like... the film trying to sell that in any way that this would be an actual legitimate fist fight between...
I also wrote that.
One man that is so very large.
Versus Littlefinger.
Yeah. Aidan Gillen is not, like, ripped or supposedly, like, a skilled martial artist.
He just looks like himself.
Yeah. Like, one punch from someone built like that would basically knock you out.
Yeah.
Because John Cena is...
massive.
I must stress to you, audience... he's fucking enormous.
Yeah. And like, Engelin, he tries to like strangle John Cena with oxygen tubing.
Yeah.
But his neck muscles are just too strong. Yeah. You can't strangle him with oxygen tubing.
It's very funny.
And the logic being, also, your one girlfriend just like baits, gets a tiny fire extinguisher, just baits him right in the genitals. And just like a classic...
Classic
fight move. And then the logic being him being like, well, if I'm going to lose, then we're all getting blown up in this helicopter. I brought a spare bomb just in case. Another dead man switch. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Also, people love calling other people a bitch right before something explodes in this movie.
I think that might be... I'm not going to say that to Vincent Mann in the producer's chair.
It felt it.
But he is in the producer's chair. I want this scene. I want you to say that he's a bitch. Yeah. Say it. Say it, John.
It's like game over, bitch. Like, it's like that. And then they jump out of the helicopter as it explodes.
Yep. Like, there's like a swimming pool on the, like a rooftop. this is a hell of a fucking
leap. How did it break their fall?
Well,
it's not deep enough. Also,
they don't know it's not deep enough. They don't know how deep it is.
They don't know anything.
Like, it literally could be like shallow as like my knee to the ground.
Even if it was a 3 meter deep pool, which it absolutely isn't, it's a rooftop pool, I don't think it would have.
No.
I think the surface tension of the water alone would have broken their legs.
Yeah.
But no, they're fine.
Yeah.
They just fall into that pool as if they went up a diving board.
They managed to hit the fucking pool.
Yeah, perfect target.
The height that they're at.
Perfect target.
I'm not saying they were ridiculously high up, but, you know, wind.
They fell from they jumped from a helicopter.
Yeah.
But if it was a very wind, decent
like,
distance.
You know, they'd have to make sure that their body wasn't, like, pointed in a way that would, you know, they would their flight path would move away. Because that is a one in a million shot.
Yeah.
And because these films, it's exactly the sort of thing you'd expect in a film like this. Again, I think that the choice of a pool was a Vincent McMahon choice because in later years we found out that Vincent McMahon thinks that people being pushed into pools is really funny. But people have said that Vincent McMahon thinks that people being pushed in pools is really funny. Like, he thinks that, like, he also, like, the whole, have I told you about the steak wrap thing?
No.
So apparently Vincent McMahon really likes steak wraps. It's basically just steak in a wrap. That's like a thing. Like, if you put anything else in it, it'd be like, no, fuck you.
Oh, like no sauce or anything?
I think you might be able to get with some sort of sauce, but if you put like lettuce in or anything, it's just like, get fucked.
No. Can't have any pure protein.
Yeah.
Pure red meat protein.
I think, John, if you jump in the pool, that'd be really funny.
And then there is fiery money raining down upon them. Very, like, hype music video.
Yep.
Influencer life type shit.
Credit, he doesn't try and take it and build a house with it. Now, the last thing that happens to them, the last thing is just like, Mark's like, oh, let's go home. He's like, about that. It's always just like, oh, isn't that funny? Oh, yeah, remember our house.
We're homeless now.
Yeah. So it ends with a reminder that the hero of this story is now homeless.
Yeah.
Like, he's not even had time to be like, yo, can we look at a rent? Or even like, I've booked a hotel for the night.
No.
Or the FBI haven't even said, you know, oh, come stay at my house.
No.
Like, the lad from the FBI hasn't even said, like, come stay at mine, I've got a spare bed. Like, no, like...
you just gotta figure
for
it.
For some reason...
It'll work out.
For some reason, the last shot of this fucking movie is our hero reminding you that he's homeless.
Do you think insurance pays out when, like, an international criminal targets you?
It's like, well, actually, the door was unlocked, so no.
He didn't have a security system, so.
That's what I mean.
There we go.
Because the security.
And it's for such a long setup, it's quite a sudden end of a film.
It really is.
There's no equivalent, again, not to bring up
Fast and Furious constantly. There's no moment where he, like, speaks to, like, the guys and says, thank you for your help. Or, like, it's really good to see you.
There's no,
like,
equivalent of the family barbecue in Fast and Furious. Like, a nice moment to wrap up. I'm not saying they have to go full fast, but there's not a nice moment.
It's not like Die Hard where, you know, Bruce Willis and Bonnie Bedelia are, like, walking away from it and, you know... Like, they were, like, getting in the car together. No. It ends with...
It ends on that roof.
It ends on that roof. By the way, we're fucking homeless. Womp womp. And then generic, terrible, terrible rock song starts. I've tried to look up who did the song. I think they're called Crumbland. Like...
There's a real Jarl to it.
Yeah. And guess what? They don't have a Wikipedia. They don't even have a Redlink.
Yeah, they don't have a Redlink. No, no one decided to do that for them.
Absolutely rubbish.
but it feels very, it does, the closing song does feel very World Wrestling Entertainment.
It does. It's so generic.
It feels very like a lower tier wrestler might come on to that.
Yeah. I
you know, it's Wrestle Nickelback.
Yeah, it's that, but this time Nickelback, I think
maybe
Nickelback,
the Jarl is putting Nickelback, me off, but
they were using a Nickelback song for a theme tune. One of their shows for a while.
Oh, okay.
It might have been around. It was around this time.
Yeah.
I think it was the song "Burn It to the Ground." So it might be just after this, but yeah. But they, you know, they were using like Union Underground. Papa Roach got used at this point, I think.
Yeah.
That makes sense. They like for pay per view events, they have like a theme song.
Yeah.
They use it as like a promotional thing, and it would always be shit like this. Like, a lot of their wrestlers had theme songs that sound a bit like this. Like, Randy Orton had Voices, which honestly. It feels like it's the same band.
Mm.
like I can't remember who even does voices, but like the art, if the song, the singing sounds exactly the same. This end credit song is not even like, it's not fucking Speed by Billy Idol. It's not the weird version of Demolition Man by Sting. It's not any of the god awful, entertainingly god awful ones. This is genuinely one of the few things about this movie that I actively think is like just objectionable.
Yeah.
Because it's so fucking generic.
Yes.
It and the band name is so fucking shit. Well, I can't even
go
fucking
big or go home.
It.
Go big or go home, really, with the song, you know? And it is just quite generic, so.
Honestly, they should have just... A part of me kind of wishes they'd have just used the fucking John Cena theme music.
Oh, well, that would have been good. South preferential! It's meta! It's meta.
You would have walked out of the film feeling a lot more like hype.
Yeah.
But no, whoever made the decision to use this fucking... bollocks song.
Yeah, there's no hype.
No hype.
Like, and I'll say, if the peak of hype is obviously the Mortal Kombat song.
Yeah.
But there's the spectrum all along the way, and this feels much lower in tier.
Oh, this makes Puddle of Mud sound like fucking Beethoven. Honestly. Rubbish.
Beethoven is upset with that comparison.
And it's no fucking Hero from Spider-Man. It's none of that. It's not even
level. But like Hero from Spider-Man, no matter what you think about the song, it's very memorable. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
This is just, I can't even do the chorus.
No, I can't remember it. I just remember hating it. The tone of it. Yeah.
So yeah, the only actually shite thing about this movie, genuinely for me, is the theme song. Everything else is so stupid and entertaining. That's just bollocks.
It's a movie that really clips along.
Oh, yeah.
There's no drag in this movie, except maybe, like I said, I think the start of it goes on a little too long. Yes. But it's enjoyable enough that it's fine.
It goes down real smooth. I thoroughly recommend this if you like Die Hard, especially Die With a Man. If you like anything like that, or if you like the sort of action films that used to exist before, like, say, Marvel, you know... sort of eliminated that.
You like a nice mid-tier action movie.
These weren't mid-tier. These were the fucking blockbusters.
That's true.
Like, that's the point. Like,
our sense of a blockbuster has changed quite drastically.
These weren't treated as, quote, like, secondary. These were star vehicles for people.
Well, I would say that this particular film is more, like, the perceived quality
of this particular film. This is
the lower budget version of that. The very well financed and star vehicle versions. No, I don't think they're mid tier action movies. Yeah. Not at all. I think this is a mid tier action movie. Yeah.
But my God, is entertaining.
Yes, this is a wrestler action movie. Yeah. It's a wrestler movie in the truest sense of the word because WWE produced it.
Yeah.
Not all movies with wrestlers are wrestler movies.
No.
But this is definitely a wrestler movie. Yep. But it's great. This is my favorite of the WWE movies I've seen.
This might genuinely be the best, quote, WWE Studios movie. It genuinely might be. Like, I mean, as in one, the ones where they clearly had, like, actual proper influence. Because, you know, the adaptation of Fighting With My Family, which is Star Flaza, The Rock, Florence Pugh, Nick Frost, and what have you.
Yeah, that doesn't feel very WWE Studios.
No, that feels much. To be honest, that's much more Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah,
like,
and that's also based on source material. It's not.
I suppose technically off a Channel 4 documentary.
Yeah,
and then obviously based off actual people's lives. Yeah, I very much would say that. Like, actually looking at the list of films that have supposed WWE involvement, like more than just, you know.
We're contracting our wrestler out to you as an actor, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean...
You can feel the WWE influence in this movie.
You really can. I think this might actually be legitimately the best one.
Yeah.
Now, a part of me kind of wants to watch 12 Rounds 2.
Who's the lead?
12 Rounds 2 Reloaded, to give it its full title, was... that stars... at the time, John Cena's probably quite biggest rival, Randy Orton.
Okay.
Who, as a human being, is a fascinating character. Former Marine, went AWOL, apparently used to shit in people's bags. Randy Orton's fucking mad.
Okay.
Yep. And then you have 12 Rounds 3, Lockdown, which does Dean Ambrose, a.k.a. John Moxley, a.k.a. every other fucking name. Like... It's just fascinating that the two, quote, franchises
Are both John Cena originated?
He appears in none of the sequels.
None of the sequels. Like, they just use... But, like, I don't see the...
There are six Marines.
That's hilarious. I don't see the purpose of having sequel to 12 Rounds, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't really know what you do as a sequel.
It just confuses me conceptually that they would exist.
Yeah. I mean, you have other stuff. But, yeah. I mean... Should we do a whole spin-off podcast with just anything that has the words WWE Studios /films as a sort of production company? Because I will tell you now, some of the shit you will see is quite... Like, you're going to see some Bible movies. You're going to see some films starring religious people. Like, you're going to see, you know, Jetsons film. You're going to see... you're going to see six fucking Marine movies. There are multiple films with Shawn Michaels. There's
some people I do recognise from some of these films.
There is an American country musical with Shawn Michaels in it.
Beautiful. I know Big Show's in some of these.
Big Show is in at least, he's definitely in a few. He also, Big Show even had a fucking TV show called The Big Show Show.
Yeah.
Which,
seen that trailer.
Literally looks like fucking that Full House type thing.
Perfect.
Yep. Watch 12 Rounds, it's fucking delightful.
Dude, I reference it so often. It was the obvious next choice for this, because I talk about it all the time.
You fucking love this movie.
It's a great movie.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for your time. We really hope you enjoy it. Goodbye.
Bye.
You were listening to the Darling Why podcast presented by Louis Tangarides and Kate Stewart. If you liked what you heard, please feel free to give us a follow at Darling Why Podcast on Instagram. Feel free to rate and subscribe on whatever podcast feed you're listening to. This podcast is produced, edited, and put together entirely by Louis Tangarides and Kate Stewart. Thanks for listening. See you next time.